hit Cinemassacre's Audio Slaughter. This is James Rolfe. I'm here with my wife, who we shall call Mrs.
Hello.
Music is an important thing in our lives. It's like a drug. It changes our states of mind. It brings people together. It's brought the two of us together. We enjoy listening to it when we give our brains permission to zone out. On Cinemassacre.com, I'm usually too busy talking about video games and films, but I'm as much a music lover as the rest.
So music is kind of a new category for Cinemassacre. It can be hard to describe sometimes because it's so abstract, but we enjoy talking about it a lot and thought that it would be a good thing to bring to the site. The two of us have been to a lot of concerts together and share lots of the same favorite bands, so we decided let's talk about them. For this, we're going to dedicate each episode to a particular band.
And usually we do the band introduction right off the bat, but we felt this is the first episode, and if we like it and if everybody else likes it, we'll make more. But anyway, now we're going to do the band introduction. Today's band, Led Zeppelin. A good one to start with because they were the pioneers of the hard rock and metal genre. Along with Black Sabbath and Deep Purple, they made up the holy trinity of rock that all emerged from the late 60s and made an impact on the turn of the decade, with singer Robert Plant, guitarist Jimmy Page, bassist and keyboardist John Paul Jones, and the late drummer John Bonham. Led Zeppelin gave their own spin on almost every genre of music. Bluegrass, folk music with elements of jazz, funk, early rock and roll, and developed a new heavy sound that helped forge the fire that molded the metal. Music is like nutrition. There's all kinds, but with a little bit of lead in your diet, you get all your vitamins. Did you like that?
Yeah, that was funny.
I used that in college one time and it got applause.
Nice.
So I'm gonna tell everybody what we're gonna do here, straight and simple. There's no script other than my band intro. First, we're always gonna do the band intro, which we already did, mention the band members. Then we're gonna talk about how we got into the band. Then we're gonna talk about why the band is interesting, what they sound like in the studio and live. Then we're going to talk about the albums, their whole body of work, and our opinions on them, while giving any kind of history and context.
Could get a little long on my part there, sorry.
It might be uneven. There might be bands where I have more to say about than others, and ones where you might have more to say about than others. Then at the end, we're going to talk about the band's current activity, if any, and if we've seen them live. And then we're going to give recommendations. If you're new to the band, what's the best album to start with? And any books or anything you read about them. And then at the very, very end of all this, just so we have an excuse to talk about other bands, we're going to talk about that metal show's top fives.
Yeah, TMS.
We love watching that metal show. We're a very big fan, and on VH1 Classic. And they always do a top five, like top five drummers or something like that. And we always get into a conversation about it. And that's why those things are great, because they get you thinking. And so we're going to do a top five of one of the ones that they did already, and we're going to talk about whether we agree or which bands we think they left out or...
Yeah, we'll basically just let you in on the conversations that follow the show between James and I.
Exactly. We're just going to try and maybe recreate some of our own domestic conversations.
Yeah. Usually we've got a good half hour after each show of where we're talking about what we just watched.
So now that I've talked a whole bunch and with that long introduction just to explain, now we're going to get into it. So how did you get into Led Zeppelin?
Well, like most people, the first song I've heard was Stairway to Heaven. I was probably like 12 or 13 years old. I don't know if I heard it on the radio, at a school dance or something, but I heard Stairway to Heaven and I was like, this song's awesome. So I bought the Best of Led Zeppelin Early Days CD, the compilation, and from there I became obsessed with a bunch of other songs on that album, particularly Battle of Evermore was one of my favorites, and probably like the next week I went out and bought the whole box set. So I very quickly went from Stairway to Heaven to having the entire discography.
So it was the box set that had all their albums?
Yeah, the box set that had every album.
That's the one I should have got.
So yeah, from the moment I got the box set, I kind of became known among my friends as the Zeppelin girl. They were definitely my favorite band growing up and still are. So that's how I got into them. Not very interesting. Stairway to Heaven got me, you know, started just like it probably did for everybody else.
Yeah, I'm not going to be very original there either. I think, yeah, Stairway to Heaven was the first one I heard. I didn't know who Led Zeppelin was before that. My next door neighbor brought the song over to my house because he heard that there was a backwards message in the song, like something about Satan or something. And I had this thing on my computer, which this was new at the time. This was like Windows 95. And there was a thing where you could record a sound and then you could reverse it. And when we figured out how to reverse wave files, we thought that was so awesome. So my friend put the song into my computer. I think we had to like use a microphone and record it off of his CD player, like from the speaker. And this was, you know, the hard drive had like 3 gigs of hard drive space on the whole thing. So, you know, this wave file actually took up more space of anything that I had on there at the time. But it was like an 8-minute song for one thing. And yeah. And after we tried to reverse it, which we didn't hear anything, by the way, it's complete crap. Every time when I would log into AOL, and it would take like 8 minutes to start up. So it was the perfect amount of time to listen to Stairway to Heaven. So every time I went online, I listened to Stairway to Heaven. So after repeated listenings, then I heard the Puff Daddy like remix of Kashmir.
Oh, you poor thing.
And I was like, well, what is this? Like, who is this Jimmy Page guy? And oh, he's from Led Zeppelin. Well, what's with this band Led Zeppelin? And then I started getting interested. And the set that I got was the 4-disc remasters, where it was basically like a 4-disc greatest hits. So yeah. Now, why is the band interesting? Like, what do they sound like? Like, say somebody didn't even really know anything about them. How would you describe them?
I mean, well, the thing for me with Zeppelin is that, and you touched on it in your intro to them, is that they have every sound. They are influenced by so many different things, and so there's a lot to, like, you know, hook somebody in. If you like bluegrass, if you're more of a, you know, country western even kind of person, you can hinge on that stuff that they do. They take influences from, you know, Indian sitar music even, and there's like a lot of different things that you can get interested in.
It almost feels like you're listening to a whole history of music when you're listening to Led Zeppelin, because mm-hmm. their sound is so diverse.
And it's not from like the first album and it doesn't like progress. Each album has all the different influences among them. It's not like one album is very bluesy, one album is very hard. They each have the variety pack.
It's just a very eclectic sound. It just touches all kinds of different, you know, styles.
Yeah.
And they have lots of lyrics inspired by like fantasy and Lord of the Rings and stuff.
For me, one of the things that makes Zeppelin so iconic and so mystical even is that they never had a chance to fizzle out. They ended the band with the death of John Bonham in 1980, and so unlike a lot of their contemporaries, they didn't have a chance to kind of fade into the mist.
One thing, though, about Led Zeppelin is that their live music is as important to listen to as their studio recordings, because every time they play a song, it sounds different. All right, so their debut album from 1969, Led Zeppelin 1, what do you have to say about it?
Yeah, I mean, for most people, they gravitate toward the radio hits like Good Times, Bad Times, Communication Breakdown. But for me, I always, you know, have a little bit of a different perspective on Zeppelin, and I like the bluesy stuff a little better. And for me, there's like some really great songs on there, like Black Mountainside, Babe, I'm Gonna Leave You. Those are some really great songs.
It's one hell of a debut album. Yeah, it encapsulates everything that made them great. And Led Zeppelin is one of the hardest bands to talk about from album to album, because I think of their music as just one big body of work.
Mm-hmm.
There isn't really as many things that distinguish one album from another as other, you know, as much as other bands were.
And I think you and I, for our age too, you know, we came to Zeppelin after they were done, basically. So we weren't going out and getting the records as they came out, you know, we don't have that kind of a memory of them. We have, you know, like I said in the beginning, I got the whole box set right away, and so I had my pick and choice of the whole discography. You know, just the nature of our age and how we came about being such huge fans is much different than, say, if we were in our 50s or 60 years old right now.
Yeah, we're never going to have a firsthand impression of all these bands from the 70s that we've been born and then have to just go back and catch up.
Yeah.
I think Dazed and Confused off the first album is maybe, like, if I was really hard-pressed to, like, point to a song that sort of shows what Led Zeppelin is all about, Dazed and Confused, it just has this really experimental sound to it, and it has this like descending bass line, and then it just like goes into this whole epic. It's crazy.
It influenced a lot of people too, that song. It gave a lot to rock and roll.
Yeah, Your Time Is Gonna Come, I love that one.
Mm-hmm.
With that organ in the beginning, and yeah, great, great stuff. The second album, Led Zeppelin II, released that same year, actually, 1969.
Yeah, they were pretty closely released together.
Which is the way it was back in the 70s. You know, bands would release albums a lot quicker. I think it was just the way things are done now. You know, it's just a different environment these days. Of course, this one has Whole Lot of Love.
Yeah.
Which is another Led Zeppelin live staple.
Yeah, there's a lot of different radio hits on here. There's some personal favorites of mine as What Is and What Should Never Be was probably maybe the third song of Zeppelin's that I got really into after Battle of Evermore and Stairway. Then there's Ramble On and Bring It On Home, which are some favorites of mine. Bring It On Home has harmonica in it, which I am a sucker for, anything with a harmonica. Thank You was played at our wedding, so.
That's like, right, yeah.
We clearly liked that song enough for it to be played at our wedding. And there's Moby Dick, which is Bonzo's drum solo, kind of.
Yeah, in the middle of it, it has the big solo.
Everyone knows him for that song. And so I have a funny story about the Lemon song, which is part of this album. Back when I was a teenager and just like starting to get into Zeppelin, and I thought I knew everything about it and everything, I used to relate to one of my uncles who was also into classic rock quite a bit, and he was talking about how he was frustrated that his daughters, my cousins, were all into rap and everything, and the rap was all about, you know, sex and drugs and violence and all that stuff. And I kind of put him in his place, and I brought up that, like, you know, so was our music, so was Zeppelin, and, you know, all the music that we listened to as well, but it just was presented in a different way. And I brought up the Lemon song, you know, squeeze my lemon till the juice runs down my leg, and I was like, how's that not about sex? And he's like, oh, well, that's different. So.
All right, Led Zeppelin III, 1970. This one is a lot more on the bluegrass side.
It is my favorite album.
It is her favorite album. And it's a great one. I think at first, when I first heard this one a long time ago, I didn't really like it as much because it sort of misleads you a bit that the heaviest track is Immigrant Song, which is what it opens with. So It's this crushing song, and it's like it just hits you with the hammer of the gods right off the bat. And then it goes into, like...
Yeah, some more bluesy stuff. My all-time favorite Led Zeppelin song is That's the Way. I don't know why. I just fell in love with that song when I heard it the first time, and it's my very, very favorite song. The whole Gallows Pole, Tangerine, Broadway Our Stomp, every one of those songs are up there on my favorites.
My favorite song on the album is Gallows Pole.
Yeah, I mean, that's such an anthem. For being miserable. It's just so wonderful.
Do you think it's miserable?
Eh, I don't know.
I mean, it's Gallows Pole, but it's, I don't know, it just sounds upbeat to me.
Well, it's upbeat in tempo, but the content of the song.
Yeah, I think it's all just
speaking
the
of content
feel.
Of songs, a fun fact is Broadway Our Stomp, a lot of people think that's like a love song, but it was actually written for Robert Plant's dog, Strider. The lyric...
He mentioned,
Yeah, like a lot of people think it says, a blue-eyed girl, but it's actually a blue-eyed merle, which is another word for dog. And
yeah, I never knew that one. Slang.
It's whatever. Yeah, so it's about Robert Plant's dog, and even in one of the live recordings, he yells out Strider at the end. So yeah, don't play it for your girlfriends.
1971, Led Zeppelin IV, or we could call it the untitled album, or Zozo. Mm-hmm. Which is interesting. Why do you think they did that without the title?
Well, it's actually one of the coolest things about Zeppelin. I have those symbols tattooed on my back because I think it's such a cool concept that they wanted the music to speak for itself. They didn't want people to go into the record store and see Led Zeppelin, because they had reached pretty much commercial success by this point.
How was 3 received? Do you think 3 may have been a turning point? And then with 4, they wanted to make it seem like they were kind of starting over again, or they just wanted to not have the name on the front? And
They had gotten very, very popular by this point, and it was a philosophical decision for them to want the music to speak for itself. So they didn't want people to go into a record store and buy the album because it said Led Zeppelin, just because they assumed they'd like it. So it was kind of this pick this up because you think it's interesting and then find out it's Zeppelin later. Clearly people already needed, word got around that this album didn't have, Zeppelin written on the front. But the symbols were more, a way to just get the music out there without it being under this cloud of, it's Zeppelin, so it's got to be good. They wanted the music to speak for itself at that point.
And whatever the title, and whatever the case with the cover and all that, it's a stellar album. Black Dog, Rock and Roll are really great hard rock tracks.
It's the one most people know. It's their most commercially successful. And
of course, it has Stairway to Heaven on it. Battle Evermore is a really good one. I used to listen to that and go to sleep to it. It was just a nice, relaxing.
Yeah, I said before on the compilation album that got me into them, that was the song that hooked me in. I just see elves and shit in my head when I was listening to it. I don't know.
I think it's where a lot of the Lord of the Rings stuff comes
in. Yeah, there's a lot of Lord of the Rings references in that song.
And the Misty Mountain Hop. Mm-hmm. 1973, Houses of the Holy. I think my favorite one on this one has got to be Over the Hills and Far Away.
Oh yeah, that's the song I want to hear on my deathbed. I mean, I've heard it probably 1,000,002 times in my life, and every single time I hear that, 1,000,002, and every time I hear that, it just it's like I'm hearing it for the first time. It's the best guitar sound on the planet.
And No Quarter is also one of my favorites. I remember the first time I heard No Quarter, I didn't really like it. I felt like it kind of bummed me
out.
Same
here. Yeah. Seriously, I wasn't, definitely wasn't one of my favorite songs when I heard it for the first time, but it kind of grew on me.
Yeah, now I like the state of mind it puts me in.
Yeah. The song remains the same. Awesome, awesome song. There's some big shoes to fill after the Cymbals album. The Zozo album, so it was definitely did not disappoint.
1975, Physical Graffiti, the double album. This one's arguably their best because it has so much songs on it because it's a double album. The Rover is a great one. In My Time of Dying, that's one of the all-time Zeppelin masterpieces.
Yeah, you got Kashmir. Kashmir's played on the radio every other minute.
Undeniable. But Kashmir's, more with the Eastern influences.
Mm-hmm. This is when they got, heavily into drugs and stuff, too. So it's, got a very trippy feel. I'm a big sucker for Black Country Woman. Again, there's harmonica in that song. It's a very bluesy song.
Trampled Underfoot, it gets your attention right away.
In My Time of Dying and 10 Years Gone are two of my favorites on this one also.
Now, Houses of the Holy is on, it always confused me that Houses of the Holy was not on the Houses of the Holy album.
Yeah, when I first started getting into them, when I got the box set, the Physical Graffiti being a two-disc album was put out of order in the box set.
Really?
Because they wanted to put the two CDs together. So
mm-hmm.
for a while, I had the discography out of order in my head until I had to like look it up.
So the next album, 1976, was Presence. I never liked the cover of it. I always thought it was weird. But there's two tracks on this one that stand out a lot, which is Akilah's Last Stand and Nobody's Fault But Mine.
Amen. That's what I have on my list.
Really? Is that what you're going to say too?
Mm-hmm.
Those are two really great songs. The rest are pretty good too, but it's not like you wouldn't say...
It has a stigma too among super fans as being like the worst album of theirs. You know, it's like... If they had a dud, this is what people point to.
If they had a dud.
But, like, even... That's the glory of Zeppelin, is their dud has two amazing friggin' songs on it. Like,
now, in 79, their last album, really, while they were together, In Through the Outdoor. This is the one that came in the paper bag, mm-hmm. and it had...
What a cool concept for an album cover. Like, there's such a lost art now with, like, you know, downloading music is... The idea of the album cover art being part of the reason you buy the album. So this one, like you said, it came in the paper bag, and then the inside, there was like, I don't know the number, but like six or seven different...
There's at least four okay. different versions of it. And it was a guy sitting at a bar, but each picture was like a different angle mm-hmm. of the scene. And I guess when
kind
you
of a
bought it...
them all type...
Yeah.
Situation.
But I guess you wouldn't know which you were buying because it came in that like paper sleeve.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was, I guess, like one of those
kind
things.
Kind of like collecting baseball card kind of things or something.
Yeah, I guess. Or like getting like something in a cereal box where you have to get them all.
Yeah.
Anyway, about the music on it. Fool in the Rain, they play it on the radio all the time. It's a big one.
Yeah, All My Love. They started to get like a little...
A lot of keyboards.
Mm-hmm. A little more friendly. I don't know.
Yeah, this was the John Paul Jones album, more, I guess. Mm-hmm. There's that one song, though, that's like 10 minutes long that I can never pronounce the name, Cara Sombra or something.
Yeah, I don't know.
And that's one of my favorites on this album. But I like In the Evening a lot. And then at last, there's Coda, which was 1982, right?
Yeah, it's technically their last album, but it was released 2 years after Bonzo died, so.
Yeah.
That's
what Coda means.
82.
Coda means like the end of a song or something, so it's like.
Yeah, but it's still the original band. It's mm-hmm. all previously recorded stuff that happened, that they recorded before Bonzo died. It's not like they went out and replaced him. It's not like they recorded new music after his death. It's just that the album took 2 years to be
They were just
released.
Like bootleg stuff, and they figured just to release mm-hmm. them for real. Because all these things were, they were either, some of them were tracks from albums that didn't make it on the albums, and then other ones were actual live recordings, mm-hmm. but they somehow muted the crowd noise or whatever, so... Some of these, like We're Gonna Groove, was a live performance, which you can see on the Led Zeppelin DVD.
Some of my favorites are I Can't Quit You, Babe, and Traveling Riverside Blues, two of my favorites on this mm-hmm. album.
And actually, how fitting that Bonzo's Mantra, which mm-hmm. they, I don't know what it was originally recorded for, but it was just a big drum solo. And it has, like I think, like steel drums in it. And it sounds really cool. And actually, on the 4-disc remasters, I always thought that was the drum solo to Moby Dick because they made a medley out of it. They used that in the middle of Moby Dick. So it was like a re-edit of the song. And then I didn't hear it until I actually listened to Led Zeppelin 2. That was when I realized what the real Moby Dick was.
Yeah.
But very appropriate that they had a drum solo for him. And
yeah, it was
just
a salute to him, you know.
Yeah. Now let's talk about Led Zeppelin after Led Zeppelin and what's been going on lately. After John Bonham died, as we already said, they pretty much broke up, even though they've all recorded their own solo albums.
For me, the ending of Led Zeppelin was like the linchpin of what makes them so iconic. They never, to me, had a chance to sell out or fade away, kind of, you know, die out and fizzle out that kind of way. When John Bonham died in 1980, Led Zeppelin was over as it was known. It's like when a loved one dies and your last memory of them is a good one, where they're smiling and happy and that's how you remember them. They're not hooked up to feed tubes or sick and frail. That's what it's like for Zeppelin for a lot of people. Music history remembers Zeppelin as this like enigma that was and will never get it back the same way it was before Bonzo died. Unlike their contemporaries, who in my opinion are a lot like just as awesome, like The Who or the Rolling Stones or whatever. Unlike them, they never replace members who died or left the band. They're not like 75 years old still trying to put out albums under the name of Led Zeppelin. They're not going around touring as Led Zeppelin, even though they have three members who are still living and they very well could do it probably better than some of these bands who only have one or two members left. But
and they also have the perfect excuse to fill in the drummer too,
yeah.
Because not only is it, you know, somebody who is of blood, like Jason Bonham is John Bonham's son, and he also like taught his son how to play drums. If you watch the movie, the song remains the same.
What a better replacement for somebody who's died in a band than his son, who
yeah.
you know, grew up basically yeah. a member of the band.
And know. The song remains the same. You can see him playing drums with his father and everything when he's a little kid, and mm-hmm. he has this little tiny drum set, you know, set up for him in the corner.
Even though they have the best opportunity yeah. of all these bands to continue, they never did.
Not that they should have done it right away, even if they did it, like they would wait.
But a lot of bands did. I mean, you know, AC/DC,
yeah.
Bon Scott
died. Well, AC/DC lost a singer. That's a hard thing to do, to continue a band when the front man is
exactly.
gone.
I'm not saying that that's a bad thing. I love AC/DC also, but it's just that for me, Zeppelin's, the way they ended is different than any other band and is kind of what defines them in a way.
And think about Deep Purple, the complete opposite. In Deep Purple, the only original member yeah. is drummer Ian Paice. So
yeah, you know, The Who, you only have Roger Daltrey and Pete Townsend
yeah.
left.
Well,
like
even with The Who, with two guys left in it, Jimmy Page and Robert Plant went on tour in the 90s and played Led Zeppelin songs, but they didn't call it Led Zeppelin. They
yeah.
called it Page and Plant.
And for me, I think there's something important about that. I don't know. I've always respected that, and I think a lot of other people do too, that Zeppelin is sacred and they didn't try to change it or continue it. You know, it was a sacred bond of four men, and as it was, it ended.
Now, with that said, they have reunited sometimes. There was, first of all, in I think it was 85, it was the Live Aid show,
mm-hmm.
and that was for charity, and that one, lots of bands like Black Sabbath reunited for that. Temporarily. I think they had Phil Collins playing on drums for that one. But I think they're not happy about that performance for some reason. I don't think maybe they didn't like it or whatever. So they didn't include it.
Yeah, I don't know much about that, to be honest with you. But.
Yeah, with every band was on the live album, the Live Aid DVD, except Led Zeppelin, because they did not want to be part of it.
Yeah. I'm stingy like that.
Yeah, I mean, they did the show for charity, obviously,
yeah.
but then there were a couple reunions that happened later. One was for a, like, Atlantic Records or something. It was some kind of, like I don't know, it was some kind of celebration or award show on TV,
yeah.
and that was with Jason Bonham, I think, and then also they played at Jason Bonham's wedding,
yeah,
with him on
Lucky
drums.
Bastard.
Yeah, but all those shows were short sets. I don't think any of them were like a full concert.
Yeah, and you can't consider them complete like reunions. Or
yeah,
anything.
Nobody really considers them Led Zeppelin reunions. But the first legitimate full Led Zeppelin show, which happened, was the 2007 show at the O2 Arena in London. And I remember when that was going on, and that was such a big deal.
Yeah.
Like, oh my God, Led Zeppelin is playing together.
Well, as fans, you know, you constantly, it's like, almost a joke at this point, where you every other month you're hearing, oh, Zeppelin's going to get back together, they're going to go on tour, they're going to tour the UK, they're going to tour the US,
yeah.
Jason Baum's going to play drums. Like, it's, you hear it over and over and over, and it's laughable at this point that it's like, no, you know, like, just shut up. It's not actually happening.
But it did happen.
It fucking did. In 2007, yeah. It was like, no, this is really going to actually happen. Oh my God, what body part can I sell to be there? But, yeah. You know, clearly we weren't.
And that's all it was a one-time show, and they didn't even broadcast it at first. I thought it would have been great if they would have, like, had it on pay-per-view or something like mm-hmm. that, you know, some kind of on-demand thing. No, the only way to see that show was if you were in that room when they played or if you got the bootleg, which everybody did. I mean, bootlegs of that were going out the ass. Finally,
the one we watched had, like, some dude's hand in it the whole friggin' time.
Yeah, we saw, I mean, yeah, there are clips on YouTube and everything, but now none of that matters because 5 years later, they finally released it on Blu-ray. They call it Celebration Day, which was a celebration day indeed. And they played it as one of those one-day things in theaters, so we saw that.
Yeah, that was really cool. Then there was in promotion for that, a lot of, they did a lot of press for it. They were on shows like, Jimmy Kimmel or somebody, I don't even remember. But they were doing a lot of press for it, and so you got to see a lot of interviews with the guys, which is, you know, as a fan, something I always look forward to.
And the Celebration Day show, I mean, I didn't even realize it until we saw it in the theater, how good of a concert that was.
Yeah.
I think it's important, like, even though you said everything about how they keep Led Zeppelin sacred by not reuniting, I think that show was important because it proved how powerful they are live and still mm-hmm. are. And if you watch them now and you're like, holy crap, they're so good. Think about how good they were back then. It really proves, that they're no joke. And
it always blows my mind too, like, not just Zeppelin, but like all of those bands of that era, how they could function. So they were powerhouses and amazing and completely drunk and loaded all the time. Like,
yeah.
How could I can't even tie my shoes when I'm drunk. How can they go out and play in front of like tens of thousands of people flawlessly and become like these epic like rock and metal gods? I don't know. It just blows my mind. And they can still do it at, you know, like pushing 70 years old, which is cool. But I think that's an interesting thing is they let it sit for 32 years.
But we weren't born the last time they played a full show.
No.
That was just like such a big deal. And I think it was so important that it represented them in our lifetime, that there was a Zeppelin show mm-hmm. while we were alive. And that,
and I always thought, you know, for me that like everybody would always ask me, being, you know, such a Zeppelin fan, like, oh, what would you do if you could see them? And I would always say, like, I can't see them. That it's just not possible unless I get a time machine. But that seeing Celebration Day was pretty damn close.
Yeah.
Like, it kind of renewed my faith in it a little bit that, like, I wouldn't be horribly disappointed.
Yeah, and how often do you get to see them in HD quality performing? Because, you know, you see it, you see all the footage you see them, it's like from the 70s and it's on like grainy film stock. And that, mm-hmm. you know, it represents that time. But now seeing them perform and knowing that it was recorded now, it just proves that the myth, it's not a myth that how good they were. It still holds up that. And Jimmy Page injured his hand before that show, too, mm-hmm. and still was able to play like a fucking maniac. And even though we haven't seen them live, and probably never will, we have seen some shows that were close to Zeppelin.
We saw Robert Plant on the Mighty Rearranger tour.
And Mighty Rearranger was a great album, by the way, mm-hmm. by Robert Plant. And he played a lot of songs off of that, a lot of songs from his previous solo albums, and also some Led Zeppelin tunes that he sort of, well, rearranged, made them a little
different.
Except
for That's the Way. I remember he did play my favorite song, Pretty Untouched.
He did.
Which was just about the only Zeppelin song he played that he didn't put his own spin on. But that was a great show. That was my first time seeing any member of Zeppelin or any sort of live incarnation of it in any way, like tribute band, whatever. I was very nervous that I was going to be horribly disappointed by it, but it was great.
You're
Robert
still
Plant
talking
puts
about
puts a great oops. Great show on, yeah.
Yeah, if you get a chance to see Robert Plant, definitely see him live. He's amazing.
He's definitely in his like little bit hippy dippy like old age at this point. Yeah, I mean, like with his Alison Krauss stuff.
Oh yeah, the Band of Joy album came out very distant from anything in the rock genre. Like there's not one electric guitar on the whole album, I don't think. It's very
hippy dippy,
I guess, but it's good. I like it.
Yeah,
but the thing is we went to see him with on the Band of Joy tour, and it snowed. We got snowed out on that concert. Didn't like the concert wasn't postponed or anything. Supposedly it still
no
went
unless
on,
you bought ticket insurance, which you know most of the times is not worth it. There was no way to get your money back. There was no show rescheduled. I can only imagine Robert Plant was playing to like five people who could walk to the theater because it was a blizzard.
We almost walked to it and oh god.
We probably would have lost a couple toes in the process, but we were almost determined enough to walk there.
Yeah, and then we've seen a couple Led Zeppelin tribute bands. There's been a lot of those, actually. There's one I know of called Black Dog. I don't know if they still perform. Mm-hmm. Then there's one called Led Zeppelin 2, which we haven't seen. We tried to go see them once, or I tried. You weren't into it, but we have seen two, though. We've seen,
I'm reading Ann and Nancy Wilson from Hart's book right now, and they apparently in their early years were called Led Zeppelin with Tits. but that's a whole other point.
Hart is very influenced by Led Zeppelin. Yeah.
But Get the Lead Out was the tribute band that I've seen.
I don't know if
you've seen them before that or not, but
and that was my first time.
Okay,
seeing.
Okay, so
Get the Lead Out performs quite often.
Yeah, they're around all the time. They play various kinds of venues too, and they sell out like. For a tribute band, they do all right. Tribute bands in general are kind of a touchy subject for me. I don't know. I still don't have a defined opinion on how I feel about a tribute band. It's like, you gotta get a gig somehow, but it's like, why don't you create your own music kind of thing sometimes. But I had a great fucking time when we saw Get the Lead Out, so I don't know. It's hard.
They were great. I mean, they sounded awesome. Mm-hmm. It shows a lot of dedication, yeah, if you're going to go out as a tribute band and perform.
Like what kind what kind of mindset do you have to be in as a band to be like, I'm going to go play somebody else's music?
Yeah. I mean, it's great, though, when it's a band that you know you're never going to see also. Because, you know, you're not going to see Led Zeppelin, so... And there's so many of the tribute bands, too. I'm surprised how many there are. Then another one we saw was the Jason Bonham Experience, which I thought was awesome. It was Jason Bonham when Led Zeppelin didn't go on tour, so I guess he figured to go on tour. But
I had very like mixed feelings on that also. Half of me loved it and thought it was a really cool idea, especially all the home video behind the scenes pictures and photographs and 8mm film stuff that Jason brought to the show, and how heartfelt he was when he spoke about his dad and everything. So it won me over a bit listening to him be so genuine about it. But going into it, it was kind of like part of me wanted to think, like, why are you doing this now? Are you just trying to make money off your dad? Like that kind of a thing. He has a relationship with the other three members, and if they didn't want to do it, why do it at all kind of thing. I had a lot of questions going into it. I don't think Jason was trying to just make money, especially after hearing him talk about his dad and the band and what it means to him. I don't know. I had like a very, very dual opinion on it going in. But overall, it was a pretty cool thing. I don't think the guy they had playing Jimmy Page's parts was... terribly good, but
Yeah, I don't know what you mean, because they
sound
different.
I know, you disagree with me on that, but...
Well, they sounded different, and when Led Zeppelin performs live, they always sounded different from what they did, but I think I know what you mean a little bit, because
I remember... He was trying to be Jimmy, but he wasn't.
I know what you mean on that, too, but I'll get into that in a second. Well, first, the music part of it, like when he played Over the Hills and Far Away, I think he simplified a lot of the guitar parts.
Which is grounds for death, in my opinion.
Yeah, I'm not sure, because that song does sound different when they perform it live anyway, so I'm not sure. I'd have to listen to it again. I don't remember what it was, but I do remember watching it and thinking something was a little off on that song, but most of it was really good. And then as he's saying, he's trying to be Jimmy Page, that he moved and acted like him, but not only that, so did the singer. Mm-hmm. The singer acted just like Robert Plant, and what I found out later was that originally, Jason Bonham was approached to bring it out as like a, as like similar to Rain. And actually, for anyone who doesn't know, Rain was a Beatles tribute, and the members of this band looked like the Beatles. First of all,
costume and everything. Costume. Like they really went all out.
Yeah, and they even like grew their hair out as it went on. Like they would put on longer wigs or whatever, and mm-hmm. like they actually like. Looked like the Beatles throughout their career.
It was
career.
More of a theater experience, too. It wasn't yeah. meant to be like...
Well, you know, so... Concert. Yeah, well, so was this, though. Mm-hmm. The Jason Bonham experience was in a theater. It was actually the Merriam Theater in Philly.
Yeah.
And they were approached originally... Well, Jason Bonham was approached to put together a band similar to that, and they were going to... I guess they were going to dress up like Led Zeppelin, do the whole thing. Yeah. But Jason didn't want to do that. He said, like...
Good for him.
Yeah, so he said... I don't want to do that, but all the rest of the band members seemed like they were still, had maybe gone through rehearsals already, and were already able to act the parts, because when you watch them, they just moved exactly like Led Zeppelin would.
Yeah, yeah. And that's the bit that got under my skin a little bit, but overall it was a really touching, moving, and well done show.
Yeah. And now we're just going to talk about recommendations, just to sum it up, for Led Zeppelin. Anyone who's just starting out, maybe, and wants to know where to... Well, first of all, you know what? Don't listen to us. Just go listen to some Led Zeppelin right now.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'll be the first to admit when it comes to a lot of music, but Zeppelin particularly, I'm extremely opinionated about it, and I have a very different opinion than what is mostly accepted. Like I said, I'm a big fan of the bluesy stuff. Zeppelin III is my favorite album. These are not things you're going to hear from most classic Zeppelin fans. But yeah, like it's a short discography. It won't kill you to go out and get 9 albums. Couple more if you include the live ones or the compilations, and just listen to it. And then in this day and age with MP3s, just go download one of the compilation albums and I'm sure you'll be hooked if you've been living under a rock and don't know Zeppelin to begin with.
Yeah, like you said, their discography is short enough where you could get the 9 albums, because no studio album is enough with them. They're all so good. Mm-hmm. I would just say start with the first one and then move on. Or if you're really trying to...
Mm-hmm. For a very, very beginner, the Zeppelin IV, the cymbals.
Yeah.
You know, if you had to pick one studio album to say, go get that, then I'd say maybe that one.
Or the 4-box remasters that I listen to. Or
yeah.
Mothership, if you're really trying to get into a greatest hits compilation. Mm-hmm. Now, that's studio, though. It's equally important to listen to their live stuff, too.
Yeah.
And I would say How the West Was Won is a fantastic live album. It's
Definitely.
One of the best live albums I've ever heard, which we're going to get into in a little bit. And the Led Zeppelin DVD, which is called just that. It's called the Led Zeppelin DVD. Came out a while ago now. But mm-hmm. It's just a bunch of clips of different live performances they've done. And that's a really great thing because it's like an anthology of what they were like in concert. Also, Celebration Day, which we just talked about, I highly recommend.
It's a little unrelated, but Jimmy Page is in it. It's good. Called This Might Get Loud. If you want testimony as to why he's considered one of the greatest guitarists of all time, You just have to watch that. I mean,
which also has Jack White and The Edge, and you know, it's sort of an ensemble documentary. It's not just about Jimmy Page.
Yeah, yeah, but it's
it shows him fuck up at one part. Where he's really? Like, he's plucking along and goes, oh shit, you remember that? You laughed at that part.
Yeah. It's not, it's a coincidence that the three men I love most in this world are named James. There's the one sitting next to me, James Rolfe.
Okay, I'd hope so.
There's Jimmy Page and James Hetfield are my three favorite men on this planet, and they all happen to be named James. But anyway.
One thing I just don't want to forget to say about, if we can do an unrecommendation, like one live album or live movie, I'd say, The Song Remains the Same. Not saying anything against it, but when it comes to Led Zeppelin live concerts, I would say avoid that one if you're starting out. It's definitely great for Led Zeppelin fans, but I would not start with that one. And the reason why is because they must have done a lot of acid or something when they did that. And it starts off, basically, there's like a half hour before the music even starts. It goes into this weird movie thing where they're like, there's like people's heads coming off and stuff. And it's just fucking bizarre.
It's trippy.
There's like a wizard, like, during Dazed and Confused, it goes into this huge, like, drug trip thing. I think a lot of that goes on is kind of distracting to the music. And also some of the performances aren't my favorite versions. Mm-hmm. I would say listen to How the West Was Won or watch the Led Zeppelin DVD. Those are the best. Yeah. And Celebration Day, which is on Blu-ray. Okay, so now we're going to talk about that metal show, one of our favorite shows we watch all the time on VH1 Classic.
Yeah.
So at the end, they always debate their top fives. And then they ultimately have to go with something. The three of them have to sort of come to a consensus. And then
it's always a source for a really good argument.
Yeah.
Both on the show and then whoever's watching it. You know, even if it's just James and me or if we have friends over or whatever. We always get into a discussion about it. No matter if we agree with them or we think what they picked was total horseshit.
They're great conversation pieces, and that's what makes the show great and everything. What we're going to try to do here at the end of each episode here is just pick out one of their top fives and talk about if we agree or not. And we're going to go with their top five live albums. Their top five live albums they picked was, well, should I count up or down? I'll go. Number five is...
Don Jameson goes from five to one.
Yeah, so we'll do it the same way. So number five is Thin Lizzy, Live and Dangerous. Number four, UFO, Strangers in the Night. Number three, AC/DC, If You Want Blood, You Got It. Number two, Judas Priest, Unleashed in the East. And number one, Kiss Alive. Now, this happens to be one of theirs that I disagree with. That's not the point of this. I'm not just going to pick out ones I disagree, but I could probably fill that whole five with something different in my own opinion. What do you think?
I will start off by saying that I, given the choice, am always a studio recording gal. I am not a huge, huge fan of live albums. So I don't have as much to go on when it comes to that. But TMS, they have a history of throwing in Kiss no matter what. They're awesome in their own right for what they are, but I'm just not a huge Kiss person, so clearly that wouldn't be my number one. So they have their go-to bands that they always seem to get in their top five, and so like that was Kiss being number one is kind of like a that metal show go-to. Yeah, that being said, it's not a bad list. Priest being in there, of course, is important, but what's your thoughts?
Well, I mean, I think they always pick really great things, but with the live albums, I think their way of picking it was probably different. They're probably looking at something different or listening to something different than I am. The performances on those albums are great. And in the 70s had lots of great performances because there were bands like Deep Purple did an album called Made in Japan, and every time they would perform one of those songs live, it sounded different. They kind of just they improvised a lot when they were on stage. UFO Strangers in the Night, I mean, that one's on there. When they perform Rock Bottom, they go on to this long musical tangent, and the songs sort of like, you know, they evolve, they change into something else. But the problem I have with a lot of 70s live albums is the production. And the production to me is very important because I want to hear the crowd. And in the 70s, I don't know what it was. Maybe the crowds back then weren't as energetic, or if they just didn't know, they didn't think to record the crowd as well as they do today. But when you do hear it, you hear like this like, it almost sounds like stock clapping. I want to feel like I'm at a concert when I listen to a live album. I think that's the whole point. It's like a virtual concert. You want to feel like you're there. And so the crowd is very important to me. So the albums I would pick, well, one thing, they have an AC/DC album on there, but it's If You Want Blood, You Got It. I would put AC/DC Live. That one has great crowd interaction, and the performances are great. There's a they do Jailbreak, and they do like a 17-minute version of Jailbreak, and with Angus is just soloing, and it's amazing. And they have Judas Priest on there, Unleashed in the East, but Unleashed in the East, like, you barely hear the crowd in it. And there's also stories about how, like, Halford had to re-record his you know, vocals or something.
Oh,
so
really?
It's not entirely live because something happened with the audio. But anyway, I would pick Halford Insurrection, even though it's a Halford solo band. I think you can hear the audience singing the guitar parts on that. Great production. And then this one, Judas Priest, Live Meltdown, not Halford, but Tim Ripper Owens on vocals on that one. I love the production on that. And the reason I picked those is because, you know, it's just the way those albums sound. I feel like I'm really there. And then another thing about them is what they say in between the songs. A lot of times, if you have a funny front man like Ozzy Osbourne, Black Sabbath Reunion is probably my favorite live album of all. The way Ozzy gets the crowd charged up and says, "Oh, put your fucking balls into it." It's really funny. And
I'm gonna get a lot of heat for this, but for that reason alone, it's almost more of a comedy album than it is music. But there's a Blink-182 album that I really like. That's just it's comedy. It's not, you know, Blink-182 I do enjoy. I will never say it's good, like, actual music, but that particular album is really funny. Like, they just talk about Satan and shit in between tracks, and it's really funny.
And you know, you get something different than what you get on the album. Like, if you know, that's the whole point of a live album. A lot of those ones from the 70s just sound like they play a song and then they play another song. And I don't want them to sound like demos of the songs. I want it to sound live. And Black Sabbath Reunion.
You might be wrong. They may have done that back then. For
Blink-182?
No. Like, the 70s style of recording a live album.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe just like a financial decision. Like, it might have been an easier way to just get a quick recording instead of paying for studio time. So they may have been trying to emulate a studio album on a lower budget back in the 70s. I don't know that for fact, but that's, if I had to think, that might be why they do that.
Interesting speculation. But also about Black Sabbath Reunion is that it doesn't sound like it's just any concert. It's significant because it's the reunion. That Black Sabbath had not played a full show like that with all four original members since like 1978 or 79, whenever Ozzy was kicked out. So it captures all the excitement of a band reuniting after so many years. And there's parts where Ozzy talks about and says he's so glad to be back with his former bandmates. And but another one, Metallica, Live Shit, Binge and Purge.
Yeah, that'd have to be on my list for sure.
Yeah, it's like three discs. It's live in Mexico City. And James Hetfield is funny as fuck on that album.
Yeah. I love his little giggles.
Oh, I love you, Coors Light, yeah. Because when I get you in my gut, it makes me play way too fucking good, yeah.
Yeah, that was a good one.
There's the one part where he says, like, you know, I want to hear you all dancing along, singing along, fucking along. And they do medleys, too. I love when Metallica, they do an Injustice for All medley on there. And I also love when live albums also have the opening track, because a lot of bands will start their concerts with some kind of, you know, musical cue. Like, Metallica always starts with The Ecstasy of Gold, and, you know, Morricone from The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. They don't cut that out. You turn on the album, and then you hear... The first thing you should hear, first of all, is the audience chanting the band's name. Then you should hear the opening music and then the performance. But a lot of those old live albums, they start off and they just fade into the music, and
it's
it
like
sucks.
It's like they're trying to pretend like it's not live, in a way.
Yeah.
Man.
So there you go. That was just a big tangent. I just had to get that all out about live albums.
Like I said at the top, I'm not a huge live album fan. If I go into a store, which doesn't exist anymore, sadly, but had I gone into a record store, I would always pick studio recordings. But strangely enough, I got into The Who based on The Who Live at Leeds. It was the most random album I could ever get of The Who to be introduced to them. But that was like one of my first Who albums.
That is a good one. It's early in their career though, so you won't hear a lot of songs on there that you'd expect, but
I started off on some of the most random Who songs.
Yeah. They open with Heaven and Hell, which usually it's I Can't Explain. Mm-hmm. This is the second song on that one.
We already talked about How the West Was Won. It's a great Zeppelin live album. Metallica Live Binge. Live Shit Binge and Purge. And
whatever the hell that means.
Yeah, it's just funny as the content. I talked a little bit about the Blink-182 album. I think it's called Take Off Your Pants and Jacket, but I'm not sure. It's just really funny. I consider it more a comedy album than a musical album. And then another non-rock or metal band that I got into based on a live album is the Counting Crows. Live Across the Wire was one of my favorite albums growing up as a teenager.
Yeah, so that is the first episode of Cinemassacre's Audio Slaughter. For anyone who wants to know, I always used to think, you know, Cinemassacre is for my films, productions, and everything else I do, but everything's in the visual side of things. So if I ever did anything with music, it will be Audio Slaughter. So it's actually a name I've had for about 10 years now.
Yeah, well, that's a good point that you bring up. You know, it's, at least between the two of us, has always been kind of a back burner goal to get more music on Cinemassacre. You know, the movies and the gaming stuff is just one part of James's life, and music is a huge, huge part of his life also, and it's thankfully a part that I'm more involved in. So that's why I'm here, that's why we're doing this, is to get that other facet of our interests represented on Cinemassacre.
And by the way, the whole time we've been doing this, the cat has been like clawing at the door, because the cat was like...
He's an asshole.
He was like, we were having to fend him off while we were recording this, because he kept headbutting the microphone and everything.
So. Dick.
So, all right, that was Led Zeppelin. Next time we'll pick another band. Let's see what people think of this, and then maybe we'll do another one.
Yep.
All right, thank you for listening.
Thanks.
Goodbye.